Welcome to the Department of Justice Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos.
Welcome to another episode of Agency in Focus, Department of Justice. I'm Eric White. With cybercrime becoming more prevalent and varied, it can be difficult for law enforcement to decide on areas of focus when pursuing and protecting the networks of agencies, businesses, and everyday consumers. So where is the nation's top law enforcement agency putting its efforts? At a recent event held by the Intelligence and National Security Alliance, Amy Hess, Executive Assistant Director at the FBI, spoke on the top cyber threats of today. She tells INSA's Vice President for Policy, Larry Hanauer, how her agency is prioritizing its cybercrime efforts.
The cyber threat landscape is continually evolving. So we, of course, see a range of actors, whether they're nation states, non-nation states, hacktivists, criminal syndicates, insider threats, and others, using a whole variety and range of tools and capabilities. Of course, botnets or ransomware or business email compromise, spear phishing, whatever it may be, we're seeing continual adaptation of those tools, those capabilities, and directing those things toward whatever the goal is, whether it's for profit or whether it's to steal information or whether it's to steal national secrets, national security secrets. And where the private sector comes in, of course, as we continuously see, for example, 95% of the country's infrastructure is controlled or in the hands of the private sector. And that's significant. The things that these individuals are after are highly sought after and controlled, owned by private industry. And we have to develop those relationships from a government perspective with private sector to ensure that, for number one, for starters, that we're notified when an incident happens. Because the sooner we can get involved, the sooner we can identify who it is, the sooner we can identify their TTPs, and the sooner we can stop them, hopefully, from doing it again.
Right. Now, I know there's a new government agency that was recently established, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency at DHS. Their role is similar, so how do you define the lanes in the road on these kinds of activities with them? What does the Bureau do, and what does CISA do?
Sure. And of course, work very closely with DHS and with the CISA in particular. What we see is, under the PPD 41 construct, is the response to a cyber incident. The FBI is the lead agency for the threat response. DHS is, of course, the lead agency for the asset response. And ODNI is responsible and has the lead for the intel support. But what that essentially boils down to, and what that means, is while CISA is identifying ways that the company, the victim, can protect themselves, how they can improve their capabilities in order, from a defensive posture, to ensure it doesn't happen again, or to ensure that they are secured against the next threat, what the FBI is doing in the meantime under the Department of Justice is trying to identify who did it, what are the techniques, tactics, and procedures they're using to identify who it comes back to. Is this a criminal syndicate? Is this a nation state? Who did it? And then ultimately to hold them accountable so that we can either bring them to justice or to reveal their identities and essentially make life difficult.
So it sounds like the Bureau would use some of the information that you have to inform CISA's understanding of the threats. So CISA can work with companies to bolster their defenses. And then if a company has an incident, they call 911 and they call the Bureau, basically.
Absolutely. It's a whole government approach. I mean, we all got to be working together. ODNI with the intel support lead, we're all in that job, all in that role.
Right.
And we all have to work together in order to make it happen.
Right. That's great. I think the Bureau director recently said, if I remember correctly, that cybersecurity is a whole of nation problem with a whole nation, requires a whole of nation response. So that's a great example of how that is.
Sure.
So with the Bureau shifting more and more toward cybersecurity nowadays, given these threats, the shift really represents the third reinvention of the Bureau in the last generation or so, right? In the 1980s and 90s, the focus was on organized crime, counter-narcotics, violent crime. Then, of course, after the September 11th attacks, the Bureau's focus shifted to counterterrorism. And now here we are in the 2010s, shifting again to cybersecurity. So how is the FBI implementing the strategic shift? I mean, how as an organization, how do you refocus a sort of move a battleship, right, turn a battleship on a dime, in terms of strategy and resources and capabilities?
Yeah, good question. So clearly, organizations to be successful, no matter who you are, have to adapt and evolve. And I'll use myself as an example. In the 90s, when I joined the FBI, is that it was all about drugs and drug trafficking and gangs and criminal enterprises. And that's what I worked. That was what I did in my first office assignment as an agent in the Kansas City, Missouri field office. That's what I worked. And then by the time I had moved to my second office and 9/11 happened, all of a sudden, many of us who had grown up in a world investigating or prioritizing drug trafficking organizations now were shifted to work counterterrorism. Hmm. And so our workforce must adapt to that evolving threat, what that priority is, what's important to our nation, in order to combat it, in order to identify who's behind it and responsible. And then, of course, as you pointed out, over time, we have become a society that is inherently reliant upon technology. And this is the world we live in. It's also the world that criminals and spies and others live in. And we've got to be able to adapt to that. But that's a little probably easier said than done when it comes to developing the technical capabilities of an entire workforce. That's not going to happen overnight. So what types of things we're doing is identifying, for example, for starters, essentially, what is your baseline? What is the baseline of the employees we have working for us as far as if they don't come with a technical degree? Well, we've trained a whole bunch of people to investigate or to conduct analysis or to do other things. How can they adapt those skills to be able to address the cyber threat? In addition to that, how are we identifying the people that we want to recruit into the organization? And of course, it's a very competitive field. And there's no way that the U.S. government's going to be able to compete based on salary with the private sector. So what do we have to make it an appealing opportunity? That goes back to mission.
Right.
Some of the most sophisticated cyber actors that you will ever encounter are the ones that we are going after. And hopefully the cool factor wins out when it comes to our ability to recruit people with those technical skills and backgrounds. Yeah.
Amy Hess is Executive Assistant Director at the FBI, speaking at an Intelligence and National Security Alliance event. Coming up, Hess lays out how the FBI is competing for that oh-so-coveted cyber talent. I'm Eric White.
At Leidos, we have supported the U.S. Department of Justice for more than 40 years with unwavering commitment. The department takes on the toughest public safety and law enforcement challenges, and they don't take risks when it comes to technology and legal expertise. From enterprise IT modernization and litigation support to strategic communications and cybersecurity, Justice counts on Leidos to deliver innovative solutions. Learn more about our shared mission at leidos.com/DOJ.
Almost every agency is facing a cyber talent gap, but it can be harder for the ones in law enforcement and the intelligence community since applicants' lifestyles also need to fit a certain mold. Amy Hess, Executive Assistant Director for the FBI, describes to the Intelligence and National Security Alliance's Larry Hanauer just what the Bureau is doing to compete for talent and retain the workers it already has.
In my opinion is everything should be on the table for us to look at. However, in recognizing the structure that we currently operate under, that may take some time. So in the meantime, what short-term gains can we have? There's a recent initiative that was just implemented not too long ago, the Cyber Talent Initiative, which is essentially working with 11 different federal agencies and certain companies, Microsoft, MasterCard, Workday, I think there's a few others that are involved in this, where they just rolled this out to say, if you go to work for this federal agency for 2 years, then you will be eligible to gain a private sector position in one of these companies, and we will pay up to $75,000 toward your student loans.
Wow.
And so that's a pretty good incentive. In addition to what the FBI can provide, for example, and many other government agencies, things like student loan repayment programs or university education programs where we can pay for all of or most of an advanced degree. Also retention bonuses, looking at things like that where we have these super highly skilled individuals who may be tempted at perhaps the 5, 6, 10 year mark to look for other opportunities. If we can provide them with a little incentive to stick around, then we get to gain that advantage.
Are there tools or even obstacles to, because there's always the risk that you lose those people in mid-career, they go find an opportunity in the private sector. What about the chances that they could go find an opportunity in the private sector, sort of the reverse of what you were describing, where they leave the Bureau, they go to a private company for 2 years, 3 years, and then come back to the Bureau armed with that private sector experience? Yeah. Are there programs in place for that, or would they have to leave, go to the company, and then maybe go through the whole security clearance process again, which, as a lot of people in this room know, is not an easy process. Yeah.
Yeah. And that brings up a good point, is that I think that part of the way I look at it is, should that not be okay? You know, in government, in U.S. government over history, we tend to, I kind of jokingly refer to it as, you come into the federal government and, you know, you can die here 50 years later. And rather than using that model, maybe we should be okay with, you come to work for us for a couple of years, you go to work for, obviously it'd be great if it was a cleared, you know, contractor so that you could retain that clearance, and then you come back to work with us. And to that point, we've actually recently seen several people who have left us, cyber employees who have left us, who have come back to us. And so that's heartening to think that, you know, perhaps, you know, this work, the fulfillment that they get from this work is what's pulling them back.
So maybe the stock options aren't as appealing as they might sound.
Depends on the person, I suppose.
Let's talk about some of the cyber threats that the country faces and the Bureau's role in them. So the intelligence community concluded that Russia attempted to affect the presidential election in 2016. Does the Bureau believe that Russia or others will use cyber tools in the upcoming elections? And if so, what kind of meddling are we likely to see, and what would the Bureau's role be in countering that?
Well, I think first off I think just a couple weeks ago we sent out a joint intelligence bulletin with DHS that talked about this issue and talked about how we assess that it's very likely that they will continue to do this type of activity based on what we saw from the 2016 and elections and just the reconnaissance alone, the research we can even show that included about 40 states. So why would we not think, it would be the better way, I think, to phrase that, why would we not think that they would continue to do that? And to that point, we need to be prepared. Whether it's Russia or anybody, we need to be prepared for that. And one of the things that the FBI did was in 2017 establish the Foreign Influence Task Force.
Right.
So that brought in individuals, people with certain skill sets in different areas, the counterintelligence, certainly, that piece, those people, the cyber piece. Also, though, our criminal investigators who are responsible for interference with elections, things that we would normally criminally prosecute somebody for. And then even our counterterrorism individuals, bringing them together so that they can look at the problem holistically. And so that FITIF, that Foreign Influence Task Force, has been in existence since 2017, and it has not stopped to look at the problem as it continues through to the 2020 elections.
And based on what you've seen and analyzed to date, do you feel like the Bureau has a good handle on what we might see in the future?
I always caution to think that, yeah, we got this, you know, because I think we should never be comfortable with our level of knowledge and understanding of the threat. I think that we have a good understanding of today's threat, but as you know, technology changes on a dime,
right.
And as the cyber threat evolves, it does too.
Right.
And we've got to constantly be ready for that, and we constantly see changes in that threat landscape.
Right. Let me ask a question about China as well, and sort of data threats to data and privacy. So China allegedly has used cyber attacks to vacuum up enormous amounts of data, such as the OPM hack, which affected 22 million cleared Americans, hacks on Marriott Hotels, which happens to be the top hotel provider for the American government and American military, which affected more than 300 million people worldwide, presumably a lot of non-Americans as well, health insurance companies, and countless others. So presumably whoever stole this data is going to use it in some way for some future electronic attack or to target people for some reason using that information. So what is most concerning to you about the loss of this data? And does the FBI have a sense of what the hackers are likely to do with it? And maybe with that we should start, can we say that China is behind this, or is that not the official narrative?
I would say that before we identify a clear attribution, I want to talk about the China threat a little bit. And so clearly, China wants to be the world's leading superpower. To do that, our concern is they may go about doing that by stealing other people's information.
Right.
And they have, and we've identified that. Nation-state actors for the People's Republic of China have stolen information from U.S. businesses, U.S. government, and related sectors. And so, as a matter of fact, last year we indicted two Ministry of State Security actors for doing just that and accessing over 45, I think, different technology companies and government entities to do that. And that's where we've got to constantly be looking for that type of activity, that type of behavior, whether they're stealing it in a cyber sense or whether they're stealing actual physical, you know, property, whether they're legitimately buying U.S. companies or providing a service that seems to be a pretty good investment because it's perhaps the lowest of the bids that are out there. That's potentially concerning because once you get into the supply chain, it may be a very difficult proposition to extract ourselves from that. And in China, of course, the government has a heavy influence over Chinese companies.
Right.
And our really discussion should be centered around how do we feel about that? Are we okay with the level of risk that that poses for our national and economic security? And so we are constantly working to attribute activities, but sometimes, and this is why, of course, many instances, the first question people will ask is, of course, who did it? What's the attribution? We got to be pretty clear before the FBI comes out on record and says, this is who did it.
Right.
Now, clearly, we work toward that goal as quickly as possible, and once we do that and can hold them accountable, you've seen a series of public announcements, indictments, arrests, extraditions in the past.
That's Amy Hess, Executive Assistant Director at the FBI. She was speaking at an Intelligence and National Security Alliance event. One more quick break. When we return, Hess explains how the FBI works with companies who find themselves the victims of cyber attacks but aren't exactly eager to report it. I'm Eric White.
At Leidos, we have supported the U.S. Department of Justice for more than 40 years with unwavering commitment. The department takes on the toughest public safety and law enforcement challenges, and they don't take risks when it comes to technology and legal expertise. From enterprise IT modernization and litigation support to strategic communications and cybersecurity, Justice counts on Leidos to deliver innovative solutions. Learn more about our shared mission at Leidos.com/DOJ.
With so many critical infrastructures tied into industry networks, a good line of communication between the government and industry partners is going to be key in preventing and responding to cyber attacks on companies. At a recent Intelligence and National Security Alliance event, Amy Hess, Executive Assistant Director at the FBI, tells INSA's Larry Hanauer how the Bureau is working with the private sector in this area.
I think our number one piece of advice would be to have an incident response plan, to practice it, to make sure that your company knows what to do in the event of such an incident. And number two, and probably a very close second, if not tied, is to notify us. But I understand, and of course, the mindset has been in the past that, hey, wait a second, that brings risk to me because now I'm exposed.
Right.
And what are you gonna do with that information? So we have done a lot, I think, I know, in the past several years to engage the private sector. So the FBI has 56 different field offices and about 350 satellite offices outside of that in the country. And each one of those have a directive to engage private sector, to identify who are the most likely targets of such activity, and to identify how we can develop a relationship so that we have that trust, that confidence built up. It's kind of interesting is when you think about the way the FBI has gone about crisis events is we'll respond to a crisis event. And we always say, you know, that is not the time to be meeting people, your local police chief or sheriff or commissioner for the first time.
Right.
Same thing should apply in a cyber incident, right? Is because when a cyber incident happens, that should be not be the first time that we're meeting each other.
Right.
And so We have to develop that level of comfort, that level of interaction, and that level of trust in order to know that we're not going to then out you to the world to say, hey, you know, this is what just happened to them. We do, of course, want to strive for two things. One, attribution, to try to figure out who did it and try to hold them accountable. And in the meantime, we also want to try to share that information out there, non-attributable, so that we can protect that information, but put it in such a way that other consumers can can defend themselves.
Right. And is that, would a company go to their local FBI field office? Would they work with an ISAC to share information that then eventually makes its way to the Bureau? What's the typical mechanism for a company to engage the Bureau when they have those kinds of incidents?
I think the most effective, and certainly for us, what we typically see is the local field office is right there in your backyard. I was most recently before this job, I was assigned as the agent in charge of our Louisville, Kentucky field office. There are multiple companies headquartered in Louisville, and we developed a relationship to where we would say, hey, we are a few miles down the road from your headquarters. And so anytime you want, we can come over here, and we did, provide briefings, provide defensive briefings, or provide briefings where they, not only we're sharing information, they're sharing information. The CISO would tell us, you know, this is the kind of activity we're seeing.
Right.
And that was informative for us so that we had an understanding, a better understanding also of their daily business, how they do things, what types of information would be attractive to either a nation state actor or to a criminal enterprise.
Do you think that the C-suite leadership of a lot of companies understand those threats and understand what might be of interest? For example, at INSO, we have an insider threat council. And as we've looked at sort of corporate assessments of the value of their insider threat program, there doesn't seem to be a universally accepted understanding at the C-suite level of how an insider threat could really affect their business. So the security people, the CISOs and the CIOs in the company certainly understand what's valuable and how it can be attacked. Do you think, do the corporate C-suite executives, the CEO, the COO, and others, CFO, do they understand as well? Because it's hard to put a value sometimes on something that hasn't happened or isn't happening yet.
Sure. Yeah. I would say that, and I don't want to generalize all companies,
sure.
Because some are really good at that.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, it runs the gamut. There are some that don't have a good appreciation of that. It's interesting is that some of the companies that we'll engage with the C-suite, and we'll ask them to identify, this is what your 10K says, but what do you think are the threats? And of course, after they say, oh, well, cyber's the threat. And so what parts, what are you exactly concerned about? Where can we help? Where can the FBI be useful in providing you more information or sharing more information with you?
Right.
Very rarely will any of them identify an insider threat, which is interesting, I think, to me. They will identify external attacks.
Right.
But very rarely will they identify one internally. And that would indicate they're not prepared for it,
right.
And are not taking any precautions for it. And so that's just one thing that we find an avenue to say, have you thought about X? And once we do that, we can work together, and they're really good about usually responding. Now, like I said, all companies are different. The size, their resources, their the amount of investment they can put into such types of defenses may vary.
Right.
Amy Hess is Executive Assistant Director for the FBI, speaking at a recent event hosted by the Intelligence and National Security Alliance. If you missed any of this episode, you can find it online. Go to federalnewsnetwork.com and click on Agency in Focus. I'm Eric White.
Thank you for listening to Department of Justice Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.